When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying,
"Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Blessed are those who believe they are flawless and wear their arrogance for all to see, for they are always the ones to be heard.
Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
Blessed are those who can suck it in and act as though nothing bothers them, for they will get the praise of the masses and never be accused of being whiny.
Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth.
Oh, blessed are the pushy and loud, for they are never needy and are always at the front of the line. They get everything they want.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled.
Blessed are those who are pious and make others feel guilty for not being religious enough, for they will be successful in every endeavor, not like the needy who never get to serve on prestigious boards.
Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy.
Blessed are the revengeful and hard-nosed, for they will not be stomped on or walked all over.
Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God.
Blessed are the careful and suspecting, for they will never be seen as naive or foolish." Ha!
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God.
Blessed are the warmongers, for they don't have to worry about being weak like children at all. Believe me, you'll leave them alone after they kick your ass.
Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Blessed are the bullies and thugs, for they get to always be in charge and don't have to worry about anyone taking advantage of them.
Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you.
Blessed are you when you are praised and held in high esteem, because you are so careful never to make waves. Your path will be smooth, unlike the idiots who always question authority or live their lives stirring up trouble.
Five years ago today, the wall began to come down. Growing up in the late 50s and early 60s, I never remembered a time when Berlin wasn't divided. It was my world. I heard stories of the airlift, the great airlift. I heard stories of courage of people trying to get from one side of Berlin to the other and being shot, of children being smuggled through tunnels, of children being thrown off of four-story buildings to be caught by people on the other side of the wall. The world was divided between those who were free and those who were enslaved. That was the meaning of the Cold War. It is what we understood. And then 25 years ago today, the wall began to crumble and people began to flow from both sides into each other's arms, and the world was changed. We were changed. We were reminded that even when there is no hope at all, there's always hope. And yet today, with that wall crumbled, and that world open, there are still walls. Right now, the Holy Land, Israel, Palestine, is divided with a great wall, supported by not the Eastern Bloc, not by the Russians, but by our taxes in America to support an Israel that is occupying the West Bank. And so we're the guilty ones, at least in that part of the journey. Walls have always divided us. They've always matched us up between the haves and the have-nots, the big people and the little people, the smart and the dumb, or whatever division our world knows. And when we understand that that has always been and always will be, we begin to grasp why Jesus was so controversial, why there could be no place for him in ancient Palestine, at least from the Roman perspective. The Beatitudes that you just heard, with the contrasting ideas, are a new way of hearing them, but they're probably very close to how those first hearers would have been listening. Marcus Borg talks about how when Jesus opened his mouth and spoke anything about kingdom, the listeners would have been contrasting with the only language of kingdom that they understood, and that was the kingdom of Rome. Kingdom was not a religious language. It wasn't part of the religious talk of Judaism. It was a political language. It was a language. Rome did not call themselves the Roman Empire. They called themselves the kingdom of Rome. And so every time Jesus said the kingdom of God is like, or the kingdom of heaven is like, those listeners who knew the walls that divided their society would have been waiting to hear those next words of contrast. The kingdom of Rome is like this. And so when Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers," there would have been those right out of Monty Python that said, "What did he say? What did he say?" I believe he said, "Blessed are the cheesemakers." It doesn't mean everyone in the cheese industry, but those involved in the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They would have heard warmongers. They would have known that the warmongers, the powerful, were the ones in charge. And so how do you make sense of such a message? In Jesus' time, there were different options among the people of Israel. They were in such a state that their world had no sense of power. Even the land was divided. Romans were so creative. When they went into a new place, they like the Greeks before them, didn't just go in and take over everything. They co-opted the opportunists that were already there. They found those who saw an opportunity for their own prestige, their own wealth. And so they pulled into the land certain landowners that would basically control everything and skim money off and give that money to Rome. And it was a hierarchy of money that went down from the top all the way down. And the poorest of the poor, those laborers in the vineyards and the farms and the fields, the fishermen up north in Galilee, these were the people that were left at the bottom with little resources and little leverage. And they were also perceived as a threat. But every once in a while there would be movements of rebellion. And at the time of Jesus, there was a great movement among a group called the Zealots, who were working to change the system. Now, did they really believe they could overthrow something as big as Rome? Maybe not. Or maybe they did. But they believed that their role was to push up against the system and return violence with violence. There were those that believed that there was no opportunity for changing the system. And for them, they found the path of mysticism, the path of removal. We know something about a group called the Essenes, those that probably wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, that lived off in caves and communities separate from the world. For them, there was never going to be a chance to overthrow Rome. And so they looked for the second coming, for the grand resurrection, for life in the afterlife, not life in this life, to rescue them from peril. And so we see these different contrasting groups. And then there were those like the Iscariot movement, a group of people who lived among Jews, who were Jewish, who felt it was their role to punish those who collaborated with Rome. And they did this subtly. They had a certain kind of sword that they carried in their robe. And they would move through the crowds, and you would never know who they were. And they would kill the person and then simply walk away. They were considered the most radical of radicals in Jesus' day. And so then comes this mystic preacher, probably illiterate, from the north, from Galilee, speaking about a different kind of kingdom. Now there are those that have said Jesus was not political. But when you use language like kingdom in a place run by the Romans, everything you say is political. And after this week, reading various blogs about the election and various interpretations of who Jesus is and would have been on Tuesday, got me stirred up. Because we see the same kind of contrast going on as we're in that first century. We have the contrast of those that paint Jesus as the revolutionary that's going to change the system. And then we have those that paint Jesus in such spiritual language that he's completely removed from anything that's going on. And to follow Jesus is to not be engaged in any way with social change. But the real Jesus was much more complicated than that. He was engaged, and he was pushing against Rome, but in a different way than the zealots. And he wasn't escaping to some other world. When he talked a prayer like, "On earth as it is in heaven," there's nothing otherworldly about that at all. That's a prayer for justice and peace and holiness to penetrate everything about this world and about this life. And so when he said, "Blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who are persecuted, blessed are the peacemakers," he was envisioning a heaven on earth, but not one that was going to overthrow Rome through violence, which is still hard to grasp. A couple weeks ago, Trinity and the Mariposa Sangha that meets here at Trinity sponsored a Tibetan monk to come in and share his story. This man was an incredible person. He had lived his whole life in the monastery. For the last 10 years, he's taught at a Catholic college, Gonzaga College. But in the summertime, he goes out and about throughout the United States and Canada raising money for the Tibetan monastery that's in northern India. And he shared the story about what it meant to work for social justice from a Tibetan perspective. And he spent a lot of time talking about the perspective of nonviolence, which he wove the idea of forgiveness into. And it was hard to grasp it, because when he was talking about forgiveness, he wasn't talking about for the benefit of those that are being forgiven, but for his own benefit, from an internal benefit. But that wasn't an excuse to then not work for justice. justice was still important. Social change was important. Here's the story he told. When he was a little boy, the Chinese came into his village, and there was some word that it was going to happen a few days ahead. And his father, who was a farmer, tried to sell his cattle, his sheep, and mostly unsuccessfully. And when the Chinese came in, those who resisted were killed immediately or taken prisoner. And those who acquiesced were bundled up and carted off. And as a little boy, he watched all of this happen before his own eyes. And as a teenager, he said he was in a boarding school in India and was not a good student. He said, I liked the girls too much. I liked the alcohol too much. And I liked not following the rules too much. And they kicked him out, and he went back home. And his father said, you're going to have to work for a living, which he wasn't successful at either. And finally, he said to his dad, I want to go to the monastery. And his father was like, what? You go to the monastery? And he ended up going to the monastery, eventually, knowing that it would be a life of celibacy, a life removed from society, and a life working for peace and justice. And he said, as a Buddhist, you pray one prayer over and over again. And that is a prayer for the goodness and peace of all sentient beings. Every being. And he said, for 10 years in the monastery, he prayed. And he could move through the list. He even got to roaches and mosquitoes. But there was one part he couldn't pray with authenticity, and that was for the Chinese. He hated the Chinese, and every time he prayed, it came up and tore him apart. And he knew that he couldn't be the priest he needed to be with that kind of hatred. And so he made that his hardest vow to change. And he said one day he was praying and he almost didn't notice it, but he actually prayed for the well-being of the Chinese and visualized the very people that traumatized him so much as a child. Moving through the village, certain faces he could still see from that post-traumatic stress, and he prayed for their well-being. There was something about listening to him that reminded me of the kind of challenge that Jesus takes us to, the kind of peacemaking that Jesus meant, and the kind of spirituality rooted in justice that we are called to respond to, even in the midst of the political divide in this country. That somehow we are to hold to our convictions, to work for justice, to work for peace, to do what we can, but to do it in a way that truly works toward the well-being of all people. People say that the most difficult thing Jesus ever said was to love your neighbor, but I don't think that that's so hard. Most of us are okay with our neighbors. It's when Jesus took it to that next step and he said, love your enemies. Again, the crowd must have been sort of like, what? He didn't say what I thought he just said, did he? Yes, he did. And that is the challenge that we face in our own spirituality. And our challenge in calling ourselves people who follow in his footsteps. We are part of the body politic, just as community. We are a people in community in the world. And Jesus was rooted in that political understanding of the world himself. and was engaged in it, was not removed from it, but not engaged in the way that we often fall into in our us and them society, in our mentality of sizing people up, of needing there to be, even among liberals, folks, there to be a good side of the wall and a bad side of the wall. When Jesus talks about peacemaking, he's not seeing a wall at all. How do we get there? I don't know. It's not easy. But I'm going to continue to pray for all sentient beings. I'm going to continue to try to model in my own struggle what it means to visualize that kind of kingdom on earth. Some of you will remember these words. Hey you, out there beyond the wall, breaking bottles in the hall, can you help me? Hey you. Hey you. Help us to remember we're not alone. Hey you. Together we stand. What did Roger Waters say, that last line? Divided we fall. Divided we fall. Divided we fall.